The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I want to begin this talk by recounting a famous psychology experiment. Some of you have probably heard of it, and being told again is maybe not so interesting, you know it, but the implications of it are interesting and I think important to consider. And this was an experiment done at the Princeton Theological Seminary in 1970. And the subjects who are going to go through this experiment were theology students, Christian, being trained to be Christian ministers. And who supposedly were quite familiar with their scriptures and stories in their scriptures. And the experiment was at one of these different times. The theology student was told that they were late, but they would, you know, they really needed to go across campus to give a talk on the story of the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan story, if you don't know, had to do with a man who was sick on the side of the road. I think he'd been robbed and beaten up and was very sick and, you know, and maybe in the danger of dying. And a variety of people coming down the road just ignored him until this man who was belonged to the people of the called Samaritans stopped and helped him and supported him, took him to an inn, left and so made it possible for the person to not die, to save the person's life. So the Good Samaritan is a stranger who stops to care for someone. So I told my wife this morning that I was going to give this talk on this kind of story. She said, well, if on the way to IMC, someone needs you, you better stop. And then I thought, I should have left earlier then. So they did this experiment. So the theology students had to go give this talk about the Good Samaritan. But they were given very little time. They were like late for giving the talk. So they were told to go across campus to give the talk. On the way there, unbeknownst to them, an actor was there disheveled and dirty and, you know, and sitting propped up against a wall, kind of slumped over, kind of head in their hands or something, in their knees. And as the person walked by, this actor was moaning and groaning. And the study was to see who would stop. And after all, the subject of their talk was that very thing. And a great majority of the seminary students did not stop, but just kept going. And the idea being that somehow in being in a hurry, people don't have time to help. The hurried mindset, maybe you don't even notice maybe what's there, because you're so in a hurry to get something, and maybe it's high pressure, maybe they're being graded on giving this talk, maybe, and so the pressure, all kinds of things contributed to, you know, not stopping to take care of someone. And so it's kind of heartbreaking that that's how it works. But so the implications of this story for us is that certainly, one simple one is that if we want to live in the world in a way to help people, to help society, help this world of ours, don't be in a hurry. Don't even be in a hurry to help, maybe. Don't be in a hurry. Give yourself time. Live a different life. Because there are certain ways of living life where you're not in the mindset and the heart set to be able to notice and stop and care and come from that caring place for the world. This world of ours, for some of us, has so many temptations, so many things to do, so many demands. The more there's been time-saving devices kind of invented over the last 150 years or so, the more it gives us a chance to do more things and more things and more things. And so it's kind of epidemic in our kind of circles for some of us, how little time there is to do all the things that we can do and fill our time with. How does that affect us? I think one of the ways is that it causes us sometimes to be out of touch with important, healthy, valuable places within us, because we're so distracted, we're so caught up, we're in a hurry, we're preoccupied, we're doing things rather than feeling things and being present. So in Buddhism, there's a lot of discussion of kind of opposites. Like there's greed and there's generosity. There's hatred and there's love. There's delusion and there's wisdom. And this idea that we've talked about the unwholesome and the wholesome. And when we present it that kind of simple way, this kind of divide between these two, it could almost seem like they're kind of not exactly of equal value, but have some equality to them. It's like a seesaw or something, or a spectrum. And it's one side and the other side, and they kind of have equal weight or in that spectrum or something. But they're radically different, the wholesome and the unwholesome, this healthy place we can come from, where we can maybe, the place that might help others, and the other place which is unwholesome, the place where we're not just simply not helpful, but maybe worse, we're maybe even cruel or unkind to people. They're kind of very different in a number of ways. It's not either or. First of all, the wholesome side has a different source inside of us than the unwholesome side. And this different source, this different place, the origin for where they're born, is so different that if we're interested in one more than the other, live in that source, live in that place where they arise from. The other is, it's not either or. It's in some ways possible to have both coexisting. And this is actually very important for our healing. It's very important for the path of practice that's trying to, in a healthy way, find freedom from some of the unwholesome motivations and ways of being in the world that we have. So the idea of this having different sources within. The preoccupied mind, the mind that's spinning and ruminating, caught up in its concerns, its worries, its conceits, its problems, all kinds of things that's kind of, we can get lost in the labyrinth of our concerns and preoccupations. And there's so much energy there and so many kind of certain kind of emotions that go into it. Anxiety is a common one. Desires, wanting is another one. Ill will, aversion, not wanting is another one. There's a lot of kind of energy that goes into that kind of preoccupied, caught up mind state that comes with insistence sometimes, comes with despair, comes with undermining us, comes with kind of keeping us in touch with a part of ourselves, if we are in touch with ourselves, that hurts, that's difficult. And in the pain of it all, we can recoil from it in such a way that we put more energy into that kind of mindset. And we're more spinning out and more angry. And there's anger and hate that just cultivates more of the same. There's greed that cultivates more of the same. There's fear that cultivates more of the same. If we stay in this kind of reactive, kind of, I think of it as kind of a, I think of it as, in, spatially as kind of higher up in the head, in where we are, kind of the head spinning. There's another source. There's a source that I think spatially is deeper within us, maybe in the heart or maybe in the belly. When we're settled on ourselves, when we're not caught in the rumination and preoccupations of our lives, when we're not caught in this spinning of emotions that are pushing us and driving us and being, you know, like reinforcing it themselves in us. If those can become quiet enough and still enough, soft and, you know, and more in the background or not even there, and we can become settled here, then there's a places of love, of care. There's a places of generosity. There's places of wisdom and of patience that really they need time to exist. They need space to exist. I like to think of these parts, these really healthy parts of ourselves, often in ways people live their lives, I like to think of them as shy. And so, you know, they're shy. They need to be given time and space and to feel safe to come forward and be there. And if we have lost in self-criticism and self-hate, lost in blaming the world for all our problems, lost in our fear and preoccupations, the healthy parts of us are kind of, they're shy, right? They're maybe a little feel tender and tentative about showing up. But if we could give time and quiet and openness and enough time to let these shy places come forward, enough time to give ourselves real opportunity to feel or sense the generosity, the love, the care, the generosity, all these healthy parts that exist in us, then those can condition us, those can affect us. They have an impact to live in those, close to those. If we are just kind of, and they also are self-reinforcing. And so, but we have to give time for them to be able to be self-reinforcing, support and change us and open us and develop us. And, you know, it's not like you check it off, generous, done that. You know, now let's go out and get the ice cream, and you know, I deserve it. And we used to rush around town, trying all the different ice creams until we find the right one that's going to do it for us. Because checked off the generosity thing because you smiled at someone. And that's done. You know, the idea is, you know, to live a different way, to come from this place, to make time to feel the generosity, to feel this different source. And that's one of the possibilities that come from something like meditation. It's not the only way to do this, but it's one of the purposes of meditation is to give time to settle and feel and open and start feeling what's this deeper place and live in that source. Let that be the source. In case you're, interest in the pursuit of wealth over everything else, the Buddha had a response to that. He said, what comes from this source is the greatest wealth. Greatest wealth is not money and goods and material things. It's really your loving kindness, your compassion that comes, that lives within you there, your integrity. And so that's how you become wealthy. And it's a wonderful wealth because it fills you from the inside out that external wealth can never do. It's not uncommon for me to hear stories about people who are phenomenally wealthy, who are empty inside, who are, you know, don't have any, not in touch with this inner wealth. And some years ago, there was a person in my circle of friends, people I knew, who was probably the poorest person I knew. And the way that he lived his life, I saw him as the wealthiest. You know, materially he was poor, but in terms of how he lived his life, not just how he felt his life was, but just like the feeling of abundance, and it was quite inspiring to me. So this to really appreciate this different source of what motivates our life, what animates our life. And I would like to suggest that there's no one but you who can take responsibility for that where you come from, where what motivates you deep down inside. There's no pill that can do it for you, I think. I hope not. You know, there's no one else who can do it for you. It isn't that you wait until you find the person who's going to, you can be around, that's then you can do it. It's for you to do. And it's really a choice, Matt. It's a choice point. And don't think it's so all or nothing. It's like I have to choose to be all good and choose to avoid all bad. It's not like that kind of all or nothing, but it's a choice about where you lean, choice about where you want to come back to, what you want to be reminded of, what you want to inspire you, what you want to be reminded of, what you want to try to do that come from the best you can. And this brings us to the topic, the second topic around this, in that these things can coexist. Luckily, they can coexist. And they can coexist in a variety of ways. But the most important way for a practitioner is that that part of us that's the healthy part can hold and care for the part that is unhealthy. That part which is full of greed, hatred, delusion, fear, we don't want to dismiss it because then it'll come back and bite us, I think. But rather, we don't want to then kind of think, oh, that, I can't do that. I have to be all good. And then have set up a resistance or a wall between these parts of ourselves. But rather, this, as we get more and more aware of this deeper place to come from, then we want to have that deeper place hold or be present for the part that's difficult. Because otherwise, that part that's difficult, if it's ignored or repressed, will fester and come back in all kinds of unhealthy ways. So pretending you're good doesn't work. And one of the simplest ways, I don't know if simple, maybe I should be careful with the language I use, but I'll say it again, but maybe you can reinterpret it for yourself. The simplest way of doing this is not to come from places of generosity and love and wisdom that like is easy to find, but bring mindfulness, attention to what's happening. Mindfulness is considered to be healthy, part of the healthy part of who we are. And so if we can bring the attention, attentiveness, and hold the difficult parts of ourselves, and learn how to hold it without adding more hatred to our hate, without adding more greed, wanting something so desperately, you know, if only I can get rid of my greed, then I can really have that good stuff. You know, or feel like I'm a bad person because I have delusion. I'm supposed to be wise. I better get more books and read, you know, then I can practice. But rather, these parts are rather difficult. Almost like it's useful to think of them. They need to be healed. There are parts of us that are kind of wounded or broken or hurt or undeveloped. And so to hold them in awareness, to hold them in our goodwill, to hold them in friendliness, to be present for them, make room for them, not so they can motivate us, not so that they drive us anymore. The driving force, hopefully, is this more healthy place. As whatever degree that you can access it, whatever small degree. And from that place, to hold what is unhealthy or that needs to be resolved or settled or healed. And some of us have a lot of pain, tremendous amount of psychological, emotional, even physical pain sometimes, that comes from, that's associated one way or the other with how we live from this different source. And some of it is because the deeper source, the deeper parts, the tender parts, the shy parts, have been hurt, have been betrayed, All society, people do all kinds of terrible things to each other. And so all kinds of things make it difficult even to be in that deeper place because of the pain. And so part of this, we can do both. Means we learn how to be present for the pain, difficulty. We don't dismiss anything, but we allow it to settle, to open. And slowly we begin to more and more at home in this place of a deeper source, this deeper wellspring for the emotions, the motivations that, according to this psychology experiment I discussed, were considered more the helping dispositions, the helping. And the world needs more helpers, doesn't it? I think that there's not enough. But there's a lot. There's plenty. So some of you probably heard the famous story that Mr. Rogers told of his childhood when he was young, a kid, and there was some catastrophe in the world, terrible things happened in the world. I think he grew up during probably World War II. And his mother would say, remember the helpers. In many situations, there are more people helping than the people who did the terrible things. Remember that. Remember the helpers. So what about the helper in you? What about you living from a place of care of this world? Not because it's an obligation, not because you should do it, but because you will do that in your own personal way if you can find that deeper source within. If you can rest there, come from there, and learn to be very careful to recognize the difference between these two different sources for your behavior, your speech, and even how you think. The source from which your life comes is crucial to who you are. And many people don't know that there's these two sources. Most people think that the spinning, ruminating, difficult, challenging, preoccupied, reactive kind of mind is what there is. It's all they've ever known. And it's a radical thing to begin discovering slowly, maybe at first it's just trusting it's possible, to begin finding your way to this other source within. And thinking that it's shy. That if you want to receive the benefits of it, you have to spend time there, close to it. So, for example, if you get in touch with it a little bit during something like meditation or other things you do in your life, when the meditation or the whatever thing is over, don't live the checklist approach to life. Okay, done that, and then pop out of your meditation and rush off to the, to kind of figure out what the best Netflix is to watch, for you to be watching on your commute to work while you're checking emails and the news has to be, and it's like, don't do that right after meditation. Because, I mean, you could, but then you're not giving an opportunity, a chance for this deeper source to condition you, to affect you, to benefit you, to reinforce something really great. We have to live a different life if you want to have a different life. If you want to have a different life but not change anything, it can't be a different life. So maybe, you're more likely today to be the Good Samaritan if the need arises. That would be nice. Or this week, this year, this life. So thank you all very much. And as I said earlier, those of you who would like to come and now meet outside, we need to have the folding chairs, which they're in the cabinet. Some people know where they are, just in the other hall. And then we'll carry him out there, and I'll come out as soon as I can and join you, and we'll spend about half an hour together just chatting about this. Thank you.